patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Hello and welcome to the walk-off, everybody. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. I'm on the road again, so the sound is probably suffering. But we've managed to, I know we had to start a little bit later today because I can't do my time zones. I give Adam a time every time I'm on the road. And it's always like, I wind up texting him the day of being like, I messed up time zones. So we got to move it. Okay. We do have lots to talk about today. A weekend has gone by and filled our coffers with talking points. We're going to get into this Blue Jays starting rotation and who the guy is going to be who gets the call for opening day. Nate Pearson, looking good. He just pitched 2 innings and the organization says he's about as stretched out as they want him to be. Could he make this team? Is he the first guy up? We'll kind of get into it and what we think, how Nate Pearson should be used this season. Brandon Belt, my goodness. I read an article from Arden Zwelling at Sportsnet this morning and was just like, we got to talk about this. Oracle Field, where he has played his entire career, is literally one of the worst baseball fields for left-handed hitters in the entire league. So we'll kind of get into the numbers and project what this season could mean hitting for him at Rogers Center. WBC, my goodness, USA with a drumming of Cuba last night moves on to the finals. We'll talk that and we'll talk tonight's game, Japan versus Mexico. And then we're going to get into Adam Wainwright. I watched him pitch last night. Everyone watched him pitch last night for Team USA. Man, that guy is a unicorn. And I just want to spend a little time just, you know, pumping the tires of something we don't see very often. And then we're going to go the complete opposite with how we finish the show and talk fireballer Ben Joyce, who hit 104 miles an hour over the weekend and kind of where he projects in this Angels bullpen moving forward. Okay. At Walkoff Podcast on Twitter, we do have mailbag tomorrow, so feel free to get your questions and comments in. You can go to Instagram, The Walkoff Podcast. You can get a hold of us on Discord. Or if you are a Patreon member, I know we've got a couple new members, so a tip of the hat for all of you supporting us that way. Patreon members get that priority love, if you will, and they can always just shoot us a message on that.
I just want to jump in there. Patreon trivia night at the end of this month. March 28th, double booking. So we're doing mailbag, which we were supposed to get to last month and ran out of time. And then the second movie that we're doing, Basketball.
Ooh, love it.
Basketball. So classic comedy. So don't watch that one with the kids, maybe.
The South Park boys, one of their best.
There you go. All right.
So I don't know if you started to do the math. I know that I did the math on who the opening day starter could be for this Toronto Blue Jays. And right now it lines up perfectly with Alek Manoah.
I did not do the math, but I did read tweets of people who did the math.
There you go.
I did see that it lines up for Manoah.
One more start for him, probably around March 25th, which would set him up perfectly for opening day, March 30th in St. Louis, where he would be facing Adam Wainwright is probably the predictable opening day starter for the Cardinals. So here's the thing. This doesn't matter, right, Adam? Like, it's more of a prestige thing, getting the ball on opening day.
It's completely symbolic. They're all going to get the same amount of starts by the end of the year. Shifting matters more for who do you line up game one of the playoffs and game one of the regular season. Yeah, cool.
We watched this happen last year, right? Where yeah, you had your 1 through 5 with this starting rotation with the Toronto Blue Jays. And then by May, they had already switched guys, shuffled people around to fix, to line up matchups, stuff like that, right? So I think like the actual rotation order is completely irrelevant. Everyone's calling Kikuchi the number 5. Is Berríos number 4? Where does Bassett slot in? Is he going to be the number 3? Or are they going to? It doesn't matter. They're going to massage this starting rotation as to who their opponents are going to be throughout the year anyways. They're going to use days off to bump guys up. They're going to use 6 starter here and there to give extra rest. Like, there's going to be a lot of stuff that happens throughout the season.
Here's the only way that it would matter to me is who's starting opening day. I mean, so we open the season against the Cardinals, and then we have the Royals, the Angels, and the Tigers before finally facing an AL East opponent in the Rays. If that second series of the year against the Royals instead was against the Rays or the Yankees.
Yeah, sure.
Then maybe we go, you know what? Let's start with like a Berríos, Kikuchi. You know, like let's see if we can get Gausman and Manoa to take 2 of these important matchups against the Yankees in that first series.
Yeah.
But short of that, I mean, I don't really care. So let's
performance is going to be what this organization bases how their pitching rotation lines up as the year goes on. Anyways, we watched Jose Berríos get the opening day pitch last year. And did it matter at all? No.
Yeah. Was it, generally translate into the order of operations though, right? Like,
yes.
Was Manoa ahead of Gausman last year or behind Gausman?
I think he was behind, but I think it was flipped. But
Berríos, Gausman, Manoa, right?
I didn't do the research. Yes. Yeah, so yeah. if we're wrong,
someone in the comments can
do
the homework for us. I just mean that, you know, could be a potential thing where you're like, well, we got 2 left. Like once Ryu comes back, you know, maybe you want to spread him and Kikuchi out so you're not going lefties back to back. Whatever. Mm-hmm. But again, that's like mid-season concerns for now.
This is all mid-season concerns. Yeah,
exactly. So, but still cool. Cool tip of the cap and an acknowledgement that Alek Manoa is the guy.
Yeah. And I think that's what they're going to do is that they are going to give Alek the ball. I mean, he has done nothing but impress since getting called up mid-2021. He has been the stud of this rotation. They went with him in game 1 against Seattle of the wild card series last year. He's the dude. And I think that they are going to do just that and give him the prestige and the tip of the hat for opening day, March 30th. And I look forward to it. Nate Pearson, buddy, here's the thing, okay? We talk Nate Pearson quite a bit, but there is a little bit of a push going on right now within the fan base that Nate Pearson should probably make this team. In fact, there's even a little bit of bitterness towards the fact that there are some arms standing in his way to get there. Okay. I'm really curious where you are at on this because my feeling on Nate Pearson is prove it.
Okay. Winter ball and spring training don't count. I'm with you. I don't think they count as proving it.
First round draft pick, tons and tons of hype around him. He was given every opportunity by this organization to succeed. He was in the playoffs in 2020. We all remember him coming out and backing up Robbie Ray after the game 2 of that series against Tampa Bay that they wound up getting swept in 2 games there. He looked incredible. Okay. He's had a lot of bad luck as well. He hasn't been able to locate at times. He's dealt with injuries. The luck thing, like I said, with the mono last year. He's had a lot of obstacles to need to overcome, but I don't think that it is worth just handing him a spot and hoping that he can run with the ball, especially when you start looking into this bullpen and the names they have there. There's nobody that I truly am like, you know what, I would rather see Nate Pearson pitching there. Listen, I know Trevor Richards is a thorn in some folks' side, but the guy has been very good in the last few spring starts. His 60, he threw his changeup in this last outing 60% of the time. Okay. He is 3 Ks in those three batters that he faced using his changeup 60% of the time. It's one of the best changeups in all of baseball. He has no options. Trevor Richards, they gave up Rowdy Tellez to get him, who hit 35 bombs for the Brewers last year. If you don't think that the Jays are going to try and get their value out of Richards, I don't think that you're reading the tea leaves right. They may wind up DFAing him. They might, if he doesn't perform in the season, but they're definitely not going to make that decision now in spring training. It would have already been made in the offseason if that was the case, if they were going to put Richards on the waiver wire to make room on the 40 man. This would have already happened. So I think when it comes to Nate Pearson, they're going to shove him in AAA. I don't even know if he's the first man up. And I'll let you give your opinion here, Adam, in a second. But in my opinion, I don't even think Zach Pop, who definitely deserves to be in this bullpen, makes this team out of spring training, because Zach Pop has options. You look at the names they're working with. They need spots. They need roster spots to not lose some of these assets. Like Mitch White is a perfect example, who might not start this season with the team. They might be able to give him a few days on the injured list, but they might not. And if they can't, they can't put him in AAA.
Okay, so a few things to dissect here. Let's start with Zach Pop, because if we're just basing on who makes the team based on their spring training numbers, I think Zach Pop runs away with it. Four outings, got a whip of 1.0, strikeouts per nine, 11.3. Strikeout to walk ratio, 5. You love everything you see there, but he's got options. That's a it's a bad omen. You know, they love to bring these guys up and down. Trevor Richards, on the other hand. You know what? Let's go to Nate Pearson first. I'm looking at Nate Pearson's spring numbers. Strikeouts per nine is good. 11.6. Again, spring training. So what does it matter, right? Guys are working on their swings. Guys are catching up, right? Getting back in the swing of things. No pun intended. Strikeout to walk ratio, though, 2.25. He has a very high walk rate, 5.1. So, and the whip is 1.7. These are not good numbers. So just from a, he's got to earn his way, he's got to prove it. These aren't prove it numbers.
No.
Right? Can we agree on that? Like he had a good winter ball season, looked good. The velocity's back, all these things.
The velocity is back.
So that's the tip of the cap to Nate Pearson. The velocity looks back. He's healthy. You can't have a guy with a walk rate of 5 walks per nine coming out of the bullpen. Like you just can't. That's too high. Again, spring training. I get that. But those aren't proven numbers. If he had Zach Pop's stat lines, I'd say, sure, give him the spot right out of spring training. Like, very impressive. But then when you talk about Trevor Richards as being the guy who's probably going to get the spot instead of Nate Pearson, I mean, we look back to last year and his numbers, 1.4 for a whip. His walk rate was 4.9. for nine, ERA over 5. So like he's a guy that, yeah, has to prove it as well. And when we look at his spring training stat lines, they're not any better than Nate Pearson's. Like his whip now, is 2.2.
Very true.
His
very
walk true. Rate now, is almost 6 per nine. His strikeouts are high though. 18.5 per nine. You'll take that. 2 strikeouts an inning.
His strikeouts are eye-popping. One thing to keep in mind with Trevor Richards is he did get blown up his first 2 appearances of the spring. And like blowing up, okay. Where I think okay. They scored something like 6 runs in the first in the first inning he pitched.
Okay, so his numbers are inflated. That's fair.
Yeah, and I mean, the way that this front office is all about asset management does make me think that Trevor Richards is going to start this season in the bullpen. I'm not saying that Trevor Richards, by the way, is going to be with this team all season. He's not infallible, and he's not a high enough of a leverage dude with a high enough ceiling that I think that they would risk holding a guy like if Hagen Danner or Nate Pearson are literally dominating in AAA and pounding on the door, I think they'll do something. And maybe they try and slip him through waivers, especially if he's struggling.
You also talk Mitch White, who they're going to be able to sneak onto the IL for the first bit of the season. So, yeah, it's probably Trevor Richards. It's his job to start. And then once Mitch White's back, who, like you said, doesn't have options, right? So he's going to need to take someone's spot. Trevor Richards is slack, and then maybe that's the DFA candidate.
But now,
I would say both of those guys those guys are going to get a chance before we see Nate Pearson, I think.
I 100% agree. And I think that both of these guys are going to have plenty of opportunity. There's always stuff that happens throughout the season. I mean, Zach Pock deserves to be on this team, and it really is too bad that he has options. We saw a very similar thing happen last year with friend of the show, Matt Gage. He, of course, is going to be in the Astros bullpen this year. However, he had options last year. And despite the fact that he had an ERA well under 2 and he had a whip well under 1 and all of his numbers looked really spicy for a lefty, a lefty that they could have used most likely. So, yeah, Nate Pearson's going to need to prove it. And that's the way I want to see it, man. I want to see him need to prove it. It's going to be interesting. This bullpen's going to be interesting to see exactly how it's manipulated and done throughout the year. Yeah.
It's a competitive roster from 1 through 9 in the lineup. And it's good. There's going to be guys challenging all year. So that's what you want, right? Okay. Let's pivot from there then and talk Brandon Belt.
So I don't know if you read the article, and for those of you who haven't, it's on Sportsnet. Arden Zwelling, friend of the show, he wrote the article basically talking about Oracle Park and the offensive black hole that it can be to left-handed hitters. Okay, because the wind comes off of the bay there. It's blowing the ball back towards the field. It's a 421-foot range all the way out to from home plate there. So it's one of the furthest walls for those lefty mashers to hit. And Brandon Belt has dealt with this since he started his big league career, right? He's been a lifetime San Francisco Giant. And on top of all of this being a lefty, he's had to deal with the shift. So it's a disadvantage to hit fly balls in San Francisco. As a lefty hitter, it's a disadvantage to hit ground balls because everyone's shifting him. So what did Brandon Belt do? Brandon Belt became a line drive hitter. He became a dude who could hit the ball all over the field, but specifically within the gaps towards right field. So let's take a look. One of the interesting things in this article is they showed how many balls were hit at least 400 feet. And it was 103 is the number in his career. You overlay that with the Rogers Center, and almost 50 of those balls are home runs. Even more are going to be doubles and triples. His OPS, his numbers in general, would have been much better at Rogers Center. Does that translate at 34 years old to numbers now? It very well could, man. I mean, he's the healthiest he's been in years. His surgery went really well last season and his knee's feeling good. They've eased him in nice and slow. Are we expecting to see 40 home runs out of this guy? No, but I think we are going to be impressed and surprised with some of the numbers out of Brandon Belt this year.
Can I just stop you right there for a second? When we say
yes,
he's the healthiest he's been in years and his surgery went really well.
lip service, I know.
Yeah, it's a little bit of like, you have to say that, right? I mean, they did also ease him into spring training. I mean, is that just a precaution or is it necessary? I don't know. It's going to be one of the things that we look back at the end of the season and go, yeah, that was the healthiest he's been in years and his surgery was a massive success or not.
Yes. But,
I mean, he's currently not wincing while he's out there. So that's the only real measurement I trust right now is the eyeball test. And I'm genuinely excited for Brandon Belt. The idea of this team having a full-time power hitter in the DH role instead yes. of it just being used as like load management for everyone else is like, I love this so much, mm-hmm. Scott, to have, our JD Martinez, our Nelson Cruz, our, our David Ortiz, like it's just to an already like potent offense. Really take some of the just all the concerns we have about like Dalton Varsho, and he's going to be this defensive stud, but we don't know what we're going to get off his bat. This is going to be a good offensive team still, man.
Man, having that left-handed masher that's going to break up these righties too is so massive. You know, like when you look at the past couple of years and the way that some of these pitching staffs that have faced the Blue Jays have been able to align themselves and the way they've been able to attack these guys, I think that just having a guy like Varsho and Belt in this lineup to at least make them throw to the other side of the plate, they can't dial in on the outside corner and just freaking go to her, right? Guy after guy after guy, I think is going to make a major difference. Like, this is what's exciting about Belt. It's going to make a major difference to dudes like Guerrero, to dudes like Kirk that he's separating, right? You know, like, it's going to make a major difference down at the bottom of the order when Varsho's hitting sixth and then all of a sudden Chapman comes up. It's going to help these guys that are hitting from the right side of the plate that were just, you know, these dominant pitchers were coming in and just, like, dialing in on that outside corner.
Okay, so you said Varsho sixth when Chapman's coming up. So are we, this? I'm just reading between the lines here. You're thinking some order of Springer, Bichette, Guerrero, 1, 2, 3. Then Belt, number 4. Kirk, 5.
Yeah.
And then, okay, Varsho, Chapman.
Varsho, 6.
And then into Chapman. Kiermaier. I mean,
this is going to be massaged throughout the season. That's kind of how my brain envisions it. Absolutely. Yeah.
I like it a lot.
Did you happen to watch the WBC Cuba USA game last night at all?
Did I happen to watch the WBC? I was not one of the 100 million fans tuning in. No.
That,
you know how I feel, like, man. I'm sorry. I'm out on it. Maybe if Canada was better, I'd be electrified too. I know it's good baseball.
Oh, no.
I just can't bring myself to tune in.
No, that's fair. Yesterday's game was by far not one of the top games of this tournament by any means. I mean, U.S. just completely blew Cuba out of the water. I think it was 13-2 by the end.
You know what I think part of my struggles with this is? Maybe it was that we missed it in 2020 for the COVID year because the WBC was postponed. But like having a routine is like a big part of my viewing experience, I think. Like I struggled with the World Juniors for hockey when they were having them in the summer.
Yeah.
Right? Like World Juniors at Christmas time or winter holidays, right? It's like,
it's tradition. Yeah,
I
get it.
I wake up at 4 a.m. and I tune in to Canada versus Latvia playing over in Russia, you know, like that's a thing I will do. And it's even for a 7-0 dredging, I'm like, I'm in, you know, that's waking up early all Christmas break. And then when it's happening in August, I'm like, I don't even care about this tournament. Like it's still the same players and it's still, you know, the same trophy at the end or whatever. Right. But it's like, you know, do I care about the World Juniors in August? Like not even a little bit. So maybe that's where I'm at with the WBC is like, we didn't have it last year. So it's been 6 years since the last one. And I'm just not like attuned to like, oh, it's March. I got to watch my you know, competitive baseball. There's not a bone in my body that associates the end of March with like, gotta tune into baseball. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's all it is.
Yeah.
But it's good baseball. Yeah, I mean, I catch the highlights and everything. And like, I read the stories and like the Trey Turner Grand Slam and stuff, like phenomenal stuff.
I've just been sucked in. I've been watching it, and the baseball quality has been so good. And honestly, the passion for the game that is being on display by these players is infectious, man. And it's hard not to get sucked into it when you're sitting down and watching these games. I know that last night in Miami, I mean, if there is one place in the world to play baseball when it's Team USA versus Team Cuba, I mean, Miami was just the place, buddy. The excitement, the atmosphere, everything was so cool until about the second inning when the US then just ran away with it. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to the final, which goes tomorrow night. The US is going to be playing either Mexico or Japan. So that game goes tonight. I would love to see a Japan USA final, buddy. Ohtani versus Trout, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm in that text chain with you and Hey Commie and some of the comments there that you figured the broadcasters are going to get, you know, avoid the term launching bombs for home runs in that World War II rematch.
Yes.
Yeah. Real
no describing hitting a ball hard as a nuke.
too soon. Yeah, no, I mean, Trout versus Ohtani. I mean, I'll tune in for that game. Like, honestly, if it's Mexico versus USA, I'm probably not tuning in. But I feel like Japan, USA, I'm probably tuning in.
I think USA, Mexico would be a heck of a game as well, sure. Rivalry wise, just especially with where the games are being played in Miami and Arizona, right? Like, it's just right there on the border, and there's so much Mexican presence in that southern US. I think it would be really, really cool. And honestly, dude, I am such a Randy Arozarena fan until the start of the season. In which case he becomes enemy number two, you know, right behind all the Yankees players. But
it's a 26-way tie for first, and then it's Randy Arozarena.
Yes, exactly. In at number 27.
Jose Altuve broke his thumb, hey?
Yeah.
Out for 3 months or longer.
Mm-hmm. Which is something we'll discuss on Mailbag. I had a couple of people reach out to me. We're not going to get into it here, but I had a couple people reach out to me saying things like, do you think Kevin Biggio could be on the go to Houston for pitching with Altuve being out for 2 to 3 months to start the season? And that Biggio name having so much cachet in Houston? Right. Look, so we'll get into that on Mailbag next.
Okay. If there is a team or an organization who has more love for Kevin Biggio than the Blue Jays, it is only the Houston Astros. And that is entirely on the back of Daddy Craig. So, and rightly so. Craig Biggio, all-time great, still involved with the Astros, like in a front office, back office capacity or whatever. It is a no-brainer fit for Kevin to go to the Astros. And of course, refine himself and be dominant, I'm sure, which would be just as frustrating. But yeah, I mean, that is the no-brainer option. But we'll see. Still have to rebuild his value, though, before we trade, because they're not going to overpay purely on the cool factor of having Kevin Biggio in town. Although, would he ever sell a lot of jerseys in Houston? I'm sure.
He's having a very good spring. And has looked really good at second as well. Okay, we'll talk more about that tomorrow, though. Let's end this on pitching. We're going to talk Ben Joyce and Wainwright, Adam Wainwright. I watching Adam Wainwright last night, dude. He's such a unicorn.
Okay,
like he's such a pitcher that doesn't exist in today's game. The man was maxing out at 86 miles an hour. He was throwing his four-seam fastball 9% of the time. Who throws their fastball 9% of the time? He was dropping in the nastiest curves all over the strike zone, hitting his spot. He was playing pitches off of the curveball. The dude is a master, man. Like, I just found myself watching him being like, this man is 41 years old. He's going to be 42 during the season. And he's a horse. He went out there. He pitched 6 innings for Team USA. He averages 6 to 7 innings every time he goes and takes the ball. He threw 192 innings for the Cardinals last year at 40 years old.
Yeah.
His ERA was 3.71, incredibly respectable. He's just such a thinking man's pitcher. He has to be.
The no-brainer number 3 pitcher in our rotation.
100%.
Very good. Reinvented himself too. Like, you see this with a lot of these elite athletes that play into their 40s, right? It's not just a constant trajectory up, right? Like, even Tom Brady had 3 Super Bowl rings early in his year and then, you know, had to reinvent himself and found it again in his late 30s or whatever, right? So it is cool to see. And I think you sent me a tweet. I don't know if you have it in front of you or not, but the eras of Adam.
Yes.
Wainwright, right. It was like prime. And then it was, do you have that tweet in front of you or should I pull it?
I don't have it in front of me. It was 2000.
I'll look it up. You just talk Adam Wainwright and his excellence here for a moment.
Okay. I've got it here. So his prime was 2018 to 2015. He pitched 189 games, 1,290 innings pitched. He had a 2.85 ERA and a whip of 1.12. Like, literally elite numbers
for
8 years. And then what happened is he lost velo on his fastball. And so from 2016 to 2019, he struggled. He struggled with staying healthy and he struggled with the loss of velocity on his fastball. He pitched in 95 games, 534 innings pitched to a 4.58 ERA and a whip of 1.44. He all of a sudden was the number five guy in that Cardinals rotation. And then he reinvents himself. He becomes a master of that big sweeping curve. He becomes a master of mixing his pitches and hitting his spots. And listen to this. Okay, from 2020 to 2022 in 74 games started, that's 463 innings pitched. He has an ERA of 3.34 and a whip of 1.115. This is in his age 38, 39, and 40 season. Like, absolutely incredible what this man has pulled off. And this is his postseason too. 2006 to 2021, 29 games, 114 innings pitched, 2.83 ERA with a whip of 1.1. Like, you just don't get better than that. Do you think Adam Wainwright's a Hall of Famer, buddy? 19 seasons?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, probably. I don't know.
Right? I know. I'm the same way. I'm like, I don't know, but boy, just his longevity alone and his ability to reinvent himself 3 different times is impressive, you know?
So in his prime that you talked about, 2008 through 2015 or whatever it was, 0 Cy Youngs, 0 MVPs, 3 All-Star games, and he finished top 3 in Cy Young voting 4 different times. That's good, but it's also hardware gets you into the hall.
Yeah.
You know, he's got 2 gold gloves. And actually, he's got a silver slugger, which is always hilarious to me. So 2017, he's got a silver slugger as a pitcher, which is hilarious. He hit 262 that year with an OPS of 731. Not bad.
Not bad at all. Not bad at all. And the fact that he has been so dominant the last few years and literally his fastball, like even last year, he was hitting 88 with it. He hasn't thrown it over 86 all spring. He might get it back up to 87-ish But I mean,
here's the thing, okay? Because these are two different questions. Will Adam Wainwright, let me try that again. From the top, 3, 6, 9. Will Adam Wainwright get into the Hall of Fame versus should Adam Wainwright get into the Hall of Fame? And I mean, as we've seen in the past 5, 10 years, this is not the Hall of great players. This is the Hall of really good players that we like.
Yes. Right? So will Adam Wainwright get into the Hall of Fame? Yes. Should he? Maybe.
That's kind of how I feel. And I don't mean that as like,
yeah,
a,
me too.
I mean, if you pitch till you're 40, incredible resume, right? But yeah, I think like likable guy, we saw all the love that him and Molina were getting there. But, you know, the battery record for the most, most outings there as a duel.
Pitcher, catcher, duo.
I think I said duel, not duo, but yeah, duo. So like there is love for Adam Wainwright, and to do it for a franchise like the Cardinals, right? Like just one of the all-time historic franchises. There's going to be a lot of like love for Adam Wainwright. He's not an a-hole. He's not Garrett Cole. You know, I don't think even in his prime, anybody disliked Adam Wainwright. So yeah, I feel like that's going to give him a bump in votes that I think maybe warranted, maybe not. But I think when he's a fringe candidate for sure,
that yes.
Being likable is not going to hurt his case. That's for sure. So.
Couldn't agree more. Okay, let's wrap things up talking Ben Joyce. Some of you might remember him from the draft last offseason because he threw 105 miles an hour with the University of Tennessee. Reliever only, though, 22 years old. Wound up going in the third round to the Los Angeles Angels. He is currently the number 11 prospect in the Angels system. Fireballer, he hit 104 miles an hour just this weekend, which is the first time that he has actually gotten up to that number that he flirted with several times in college ball in an Angels uniform. When you look at Ben Joyce, you got to be impressed with what you're seeing. And I mean, you look at his numbers in Double A last year, and I do have that up here. Sorry, normally I can print my stuff off and I'm without a printer, so I'm doing it the old school way.
You print your show notes off?
Yeah.
How old are you?
Well,
are you not digital, Scott?
You want me to have my Word doc up or on a second screen or what?
Yeah, that's exactly what I want. I want tabs open in your browser and I want a Word doc or something. Yeah,
I do tabs the old school way in my head.
I tell you what, I do take notes during the show. When we're doing our interviews and stuff, I always get pooped on because we throw up clips of our interviews. People are like, why is Adam even there? Right? Because it'll just be like 6 minutes of you and the guests talking. And, you know, I interject from time to time, but a lot of times in clips, it's just me with a blank stare on my face, listening and being the best audience member I can be. I do take notes though, and I take them on pen and paper, but that's more of a live process. And that is for the benefit of the listener, by the way. So you're not because I have a really loud keyboard, right? This is my, I don't know if you can hear that, but I just typed a
lot. You know what it is? I think I worked in radio for like 8 years, and this was back in the early 2000s, and they had the clipboard up. So I would always clip, you know, like I would always print stuff off and clip them up, and then I would be doing it manually while I'm working on the computer and stuff, doing whatever, editing clips or whatever it was. And I guess I just transferred that to this. I hate flipping through my computer though, man. I just like it better when the paper's in front of me. I guess I am old though. This is something we've established long ago that I'm old.
my daughter's mother, when her and I were in college together, same program, and she wrote all of her papers, rough draft, by hand. Like, didn't type it out and then delete and copy and paste and move paragraphs here and there. Literally wrote her rough drafts out.
My mind was blown.
I'm like, this is 2010. Like, you're 20. How do you not type this? Like, how old are you? So anyways, sorry, I just had one of those moments. It's like, anyways, all right, Ben Joyce throws 104.
Ben Joyce, third round with the Angels. They stuck him in double A right away, okay? He pitched only 13 innings, but he looked really good. He had an ERA of 2.08, 20 strikeouts. His problem was that he did suffer from quite a few walks. He is making a push, though, man, to be strongly considered to make this Angels team out of spring training. I know that we were dealing with texts from Joel yesterday where he was just like, why didn't the Blue Jays take him first round? It's like, over Brandon Barriera? Like, I hate that idea so much. But okay. 104 miles an hour plays.
Here's my question. Because this is the thing with Ben Joyce, right? Not a starting pitcher, right? So that's where his draft value gets tanked. Right. The guys you're spending a first round pick on, you're hoping this could be our future ace, right? This is a guy who give us 200 innings with an ERA of 2.5 potentially, right? That's what you're hoping for. This guy has a ceiling of maybe being our closer one day, right? Like relief pitchers are failed starters. We've established that. Here's my question though. Who is the hands down best closer in baseball right now? Just in your mind, can you think of a guy that, like, if we didn't have Jordan Romano, or if Jordan Romano became our setup guy, who would, more than Jordan Romano, would you feel good about as our ninth inning guy in a World Series game or playoff game?
That is a really great question. I mean, Rafael Montero would be pretty darn awesome to have. Alvarado looked, you know, like there's guys out there.
Like a Hader, or
like if I was to pick my go-to guy.
Yeah.
They're still so volatile. Like sure. Even
okay. No, that's
even
fine.
Even the top dudes.
No, that's fine. Then you've poked a hole in my water bucket, because I was going to just say, take that guy. Would you trade this August a second round draft pick to add that guy to your team? And I feel like you would.
Yeah. Which is a good point also.
Like, I'd probably trade a first round draft pick if whatever name you want to pick there. And as the person listening to this or watching it on YouTube, you might have a different name than Scott just came up with, or a different name than I just came up with. Right. Cause it is a little bit of a like personal preference when you're nitpicking the top, right? This is why Alek Manoah gets called fat. Whoever your guy is, where you go, oh man, I would love to have this guy as our closer, you know, put that name in this Mad Lib here. But would you trade your second round draft pick or your first round draft pick this summer to have that guy on your team? And that's, I think, where like Joel's frustration, not to put words in his mouth, but that's where I was like, yeah, I wish we had just taken a flyer on him, even in the second round. Right. We did pass him up in the third round as well before he went to the Angels. But I felt like, I don't know, who did we get in the second round? Do you even know their name? I know, you know, Brandon Barriera. We've talked about him recently, but.
I actually don't remember who they took in the second round. I should know, but I don't remember.
I would feel like. The ceiling on Brandon Barriera, yes, I would say is higher than Ben Joyce. Just being a starter, there's a higher ceiling, right? But also, like, he could be the next Adam Wainwright. He could play for 20 years for this organization, whatever. All these things are all true, right? Ben Joyce will never be Alek Manoah. Brandon Barriera might be, right? But in terms of floor, maybe I would say Ben Joyce is a safer bet to ever pitch in the MLB than Brandon Barriera is.
That may be the case. I mean, he's probably going to get innings right away. Like, if he doesn't make the team, he's probably one of the first guys up out of that bullpen. I think that they will start him in AAA, being that he's only pitched 13 innings in professional baseball, but 104 miles an hour plays. And if he can kind of, I mean, he's added a slider. How good it is yet to be seen. but maybe you don't need a good slider if you're throwing 105 miles an hour. I mean, that 104 mile an hour pitch was to a minor leaguer, and he got the bat on the ball and it was a fly out. Like, guys can catch up to stuff now.
Here is the list of, this is just Wikipedia.org, list of Toronto Blue Jays first round draft picks. Brandon Berry, this is a reverse chronological order. Okay, so the most recent season, then 2021, then 2020, and so on. Okay, Brandon Barriera, obviously, we don't know what we have in this kid yet. But then we got Gunnar Hoglund, Austin Martin. 2019 was Alek Manoah. That worked out. Before that was Jordan Groshans. 2017 was Nate Pearson. 2016, TJ Zoik.
Cool.
John Harris, Max Pentecost, Jeff Hoffman. I just mean,
yeah, just
all the love and hope for Brandon Barriera, but like,
yes,
it's almost a more surefire bet to go, well, we got a 104 mile an hour guy who's going to give us relief innings almost for sure. Maybe he flames out after two seasons, but at two seasons of relief pitch at 104, I would take over whatever Nate Pearson's given us so far.
That's true. So. That's true.
Anyways,
no, let us know what you, let us know what you think.
He's going to be, I tell you what, a storyline to keep an eye on in LA.
Yes.
Because LA, if they get, eventually they have to be a competitive ball team, right? They're too good not to be good. So Ben Joyce could be a contributing factor. And if he's pitching MLB games this year and he's throwing 104, he's going to hit 105 this year.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's going to do absurd things. So keep an eye on Ben Joyce for real. Best of luck to the kid out in LA.
And 22 years old. So there is some development room there age-wise. If it does wind up taking him all season to kind of figure it out and he doesn't get called up until September, I think he's going to make his major league debut this season. I think there's no reason to waste bullets in the minor leagues for the Angels at this point, especially not with that kind of arm and especially not with that kind of team. Like, even if the Angels take a step up, they're probably not a playoff team this year. We'll see. But I mean, yeah. Anyways, anything else to add on Ben Joyce there? I think we covered that.
That's good.
All right. Thank you so much, everybody in the walk-off community. We appreciate you. I know that we just added a couple more Patreon. So a big tip of the hat to everyone who has supported us in that way. If you are not into supporting us that way, 100% fine. Other ways you can support us, hit that like button. Subscribe. If you're watching on YouTube and you're not a follower on audio, even going on to the podcast side of things on the audio and hitting subscribe there, even though it's just counting numbers that way, that's very helpful. At Walk Off Podcast on Twitter, The Walk Off Podcast on Instagram. Thanks so much, everybody. Cheers. We'll see you tomorrow for Mailbag.
I just want to quickly add, I always sign off by saying goodbye to my dad because he listens to every episode. He is right across the wall right now. So he's visiting me with my mother. So I just want to say, hi, Dad, put on a pot of coffee. I'll be right down to join you.
Cheers. Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Chose to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.